Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and this is the Odessa American from Saturday, July 13th, 2024, local news. Fallout from attack on Vasquez continues, by Kim Smith. No, despite what ousted Ector County GOP Chairwoman Tisha Crowe's husband suggested Tuesday night, Odessa City Councilman Gilbert Vasquez did not change his party affiliation. I'm a staunch Democrat. I've been a Democrat my whole life, Vasquez said minutes after Odessa Development Corporation Chairman Chris Crowe presented him a copy of former Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee's book, God, Guns, Grits, and Glory. Crowe said he'd been going through the numbers from last March's election and came to realize that the council is 100% Republican for the first time in a long time. He also called himself a right-wing nut job. Councilman Vasquez, thank you so much for seeing the light. Welcome to the Republican side of the table, Crowe said. Vasquez said he is absolutely positive Crowe is well aware he only voted in the Republican primary for one reason. I only jumped the fence so that I could vote against his wife and all of the others that were causing so much trouble in this community for the Republican Party, Vasquez said. The majority of my friends are Republicans and we get along fine, but these people play dirty. Vasquez said he even posted Tisha Crowe's opponent's sign in his front yard in the weeks leading up to the election. Donna Kelm defeated Tisha Crowe by a vote of 4,954 to 3,775. Vasquez said his phone started blowing up after Tuesday's meeting, but he doesn't think Crowe's comments will have any significant impact on his reputation. He was just trying to degrade me, or I guess embarrass me, or maybe even make me upset, but none of those things happened because my shield is my spirituality, Vasquez said. I let the Lord shield me from what I consider satanic attacks on me as a person. We all get subjected to ugliness in this world, and the Crowes are living proof, and Odessa Development Corporation Vice Chairman Jeff Russell is another one. These people profess to be Christians, but they're really hypocrites, and they don't really live up to being Christians. In the days following the meeting, council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata and Mayor Javier Hoven condemned Crowe's actions via social media. Both Swanner and Mata in the meeting video appear to be laughing during Crowe's rant about Vasquez. They were called out on social media for doing so and then later condemning what Crowe had done after numerous Odessans posted support for Vasquez. Elected Precinct Chair Dallas Kennedy via Facebook called on the City Council to remove Crowe from his appointed ODC position as president. Kennedy also pointed out that Hoven had the authority and could have stopped Crowe. Kennedy wrote, "While Mr. Vasquez might not be a fellow Republican, he is my brother in Christ and a person God has appointed over us in a position of authority. He should be shown the utmost respect when he is serving in his position. The conduct violated the City of Odessa Charter for decorum during a meeting." Swanner, Mata, and Hoven are all up for re-election in November. Longtime Odessa attorney Cal Hendrick announced his run for mayor on Wednesday, and Meals on Wheels director and longtime Odessan Craig Stoker plans to seek Swanner's seat. Hendrick announced his run to a packed city council chamber Wednesday and has said he looks forward to a positive campaign. Stoker will announce at 10 a.m. Wednesday at the Copper Rose Building in downtown Odessa. No one has publicly announced for Mata's seat, although several have indicated an intention to seek the seat. Mata released a statement last week apologizing for inappropriate text messages to someone other than his wife. Mata said the inappropriate behavior ended a year ago, but he decided to issue the apology Friday, July 5th. Getting a head start. Large school choir camp preps kids for competition by Jennifer Guerrera. Students from the large high schools in Odessa and Midland got an early start on preparing for the all-state audition process during University of Texas Permian Basin's large choir camp. The three-day experience includes sectional rehearsals, singing as a group, and being directed by some of the most experienced choir directors in the area. There are about 25 students in the camp this year with Permian and Odessa High Schools and Midland and Legacy High Schools in Midland joining in. The students will, over the course of the fall semester, audition several times. UTPB Director of Community Engagement in Music and Visual Arts, Eric Baker, said, "We have district, region, pre-area, and then area competitions. If the students place well enough at all of those auditions, they can earn a spot in the Texas All-State Choir. Students will find out if they made All-State in January. Choir auditions start in September. There's still quite a ways to go before we'll know who's an All-Stater. But they started the process early. They're learning the music right now," Baker said. They hired high school choir directors to prepare the students, including Stephanie Burton, Christy Lujan, Rob Rogers, and Cody Duff, the new head director at Legacy High School. Each of them will teach what we call sectionals. One will take the sopranos, the altos, the tenors, the basses, and the students work in those sectionals for several hours during the day. They come together at the end of the afternoon for a full choir rehearsal. Those are being led by our new Director of Choral Activities, Dr. Brad Light. He's in town for this camp and will be moving over the summer to get local, Baker said. Light has been a lecturer of music in choral studies and music education at Texas Tech the last several years. Baker said the camp is going well, although it just started July 10th. Most of the camps that we've looked at around the state are 3 or 4 days max. We want to model what students would get if they were to go to Tech or Baylor or any other school. But it's close to home, it's much less expensive, and a lot more accessible for some of our students that are not able to go out of town for other camps, Baker said. He added that the camp focuses on the music students are likely to see during the audition process. When a student auditions for All-State Choir, they have to learn a lot of music, but they don't need to learn them all at once. They'll learn some songs for the district level. Later, they'll learn more difficult songs for the area level of competition. We get them started early with those pieces that they're going to see first. So far, lots of smiles. They sound wonderful. The students are singing beautifully, even after just the first day of learning the music. The teachers are fun and engaging. I've been able to sit in on a few of the sectionals and listen, and they all seem to be getting along quite well, Baker said. He added that UTPB music students who may eventually want to become choir directors are counselors at the camp. This is the first time Baker has facilitated a music camp at UTPB, but it is part of his role. As they look to the future, they would like to build a band camp, a piano camp, more choir camps, including small school, and maybe even music theory camps. I'm not really the content expert in choir music, but I'm just helping to facilitate, along with our administrative assistants, Angela Buss and Yvonne Drinkard. Without these, the camps wouldn't happen. They also help buying food, ordering t-shirts, ordering lunches, so that the students can come in, focus on the music, have everything taken care of, and go home excited about this audition process, Baker said. He added that even if students don't ultimately make All-State, it's still a chance to learn and make friends. We try to make sure that there's a positive social element to the camp as well. We want students to remember how much fun they had, not only how much they learned about the music. Local choir directors will sometimes program some of their music from the All-State collection on their fall concerts, so this also gives a head start for those students who are studying and learning some of that music, Baker said. Light said they want to provide a service to the community through the camp and provide something that will help students advance their musicianship. Lily Windham, 16, who will be a junior at Permian High School, said this is her first choir camp. I thought it was really good. It's very helpful to learn the music beforehand because last year it was hard to get ahead of everybody else for the auditions whenever you're learning the music at school. So it's easier to get ahead now and learn it. Everyone's been so helpful, Windham said. She added that she would like to make All-State. Windham said other kids and Permian High School Director of Choirs, Lori Walsh, told her the camp would be helpful. I made it to area last year. I'm trying to give it that extra push this year to make it, Windham said. My choir director, Miss Walsh, had told us this was a good option because I didn't have time in the summer to go out of town to the bigger ones. This has been really helpful, and it's been nice to have one-on-one time for the directors to work with you, she added. Georgina Rocho, a UTPB senior studying music education, is working with the choir camp this year. She previously worked in the small choir camp. Working with the large school choir camp has been a whole new experience, but it's been really fun to get to see the kids because the music for the camps is very different. When I was in high school, I was in small school, so getting to experience what large school choir is singing has been really cool, Rocho said. Quick hits. Stoker to run. Longtime Odessan and Meals on Wheels Executive Director Craig Stoker will announce his bid for the Odessa City Council at-large seat at 10 a.m. Wednesday at the Copper Rose Building in downtown Odessa. Stoker will face incumbent Denise Swanner. Election 2024. October 7th is the last day to register to vote. Early voting begins October 21st and ends November 1st. November 5th is Election Day. Municipal offices up include Odessa Mayor, Districts 1 and 2, City Council seats, also the at-large seat on City Council. Current Mayor Javier Hoven will face longtime Odessan and attorney Cal Hendrick. Councilmember Steve Thompson, District 2, has indicated he will seek the office again, as have District 1, Mark Mata, and at-large, Denise Swanner. Odessan Craig Stoker has indicated he will run for the at-large seat. Reading Festival. The Woodson Boys and Girls Club of Odessa Children's Literacy and Reading Festival is scheduled 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. July 27th at 1037 East Murphy Street. The event is free to the public and will have free giveaways, free food, free backpacks and school supplies, and free children's books. The festival will also feature entertainment, including games, activities, door prizes, local vendors, DJ One Way, cheer dance entertainment, and story time. Show off those pets. The City of Odessa, Power Team Properties, and Service First Mortgage present the 2024 Pet Fashion Show scheduled at 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. July 20th at McKinney Park, 625 West Pool Road. There are two fashion shows to participate in, beginning at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m., and you must pre-register for the show if you'd like your pet to participate. This is a free event. The event will feature food trucks, DJ, dance and/or karaoke with your pets, vendors, Adopt-a-thon by Fix West Texas, and more. There will also be trophies for the winners of the fashion shows. There will also be a crowning of the 2024 Odessa Pet Paw of the Year. The Odessa Animal Shelter will also be providing $10 vaccinations and $5 microchips from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pots and Prince, placed on TCA touring roster by Ruth Campbell. Pots and Prince, the traveling ceramic and screen printing trailer at University of Texas Permian Basin, has been added to the 2024-26 Texas Touring Arts Program through the Texas Commission on the Arts. The Texas Touring Arts Program is designed to ensure that all Texans have the ability to enjoy performances and presentations in their own communities by outstanding Texas-based companies and artists, according to a letter from TCA to Mario Kieran, Professor of Art, Chair, Department of Arts. Roster placement doesn't guarantee bookings, and there are no funds reserved in their name, but the letter said those interested in booking Pots and Prints will contact them directly to arrange a booking, negotiate fees, and to enter a formal contractual agreement. Kieran has earned a National Endowment for the Arts grant for Pots and Prints since 2013. The grant cycle is annual. For us, it's unbelievable, said Chris Stanley, Associate Professor of Art. The community, I don't think, understands how important those NEA grants are, especially for small rural regions like us, so much so that the mobile studio has gained national attention. Stanley added that it's very difficult to get on the TCA touring roster. Kieran said that they applied twice and got it on the third try. What that does is it's going to put our Pots and Prints project into the whole state. Now, literally within the last 3 weeks, since our project is now statewide, which is unbelievable. It's kind of one of those things where it's unheard of, especially in our region, to have a UTPB project have that kind of impact, Stanley said. A Midland illusionist named Bronson Chadwick also got on the list. Kieran said anyone in Texas can get in touch with them, and they will work with them to put together a plan. The entity that wants Pots and Prints to visit can write to the Texas Commission on the Arts for financial support. Pots and Prints doesn't get money from the Texas Commission on the Arts. Let's say, for example, a school district out here wants to bring us in. They will get in touch with us. Then we put together the contract. Based on the number of kids you're going to be working with, there's a budget. So they will agree on the budget. Then they can write a grant to the Texas Commission on the Arts, so they will have to find matching funds, and they will get the money to bring us in, Kieran said. There are deadlines to get the matching funds, so whoever wants the studio gets in touch with Pots and Prints beforehand and then submits the application for matching funds before the deadline. What this is going to do is open us up to a greater service area and statewide, Stanley said. Daniel Ramirez has been helping with setup and teaching kids for 2 years. He is a senior at UTPB, going for a bachelor in fine arts. He plans to graduate in December. It's fun. It's also a good way to see other places, Ramirez said. Over the years, Stanley said 25 to 30 students have helped with Pots and Prints. He added that many of those students have gone on to become art teachers or graduate students. The kind of subtle recruiting part of this is the students that help us with this grant also get exposed to a whole bunch of different teaching situations from elementary to high school. We want to expand that into other types of teaching careers and art-making careers. And so between the teaching profession and the graduate school, the grant itself has been an incredible success, Stanley said. He added that it's also helping the Nancy Five Cardozier Gallery on campus. It's starting to morph into documentation and curation of artists. The Pots and Print idea is starting to expand. It's controlled growth. We're not trying to do it all at one time because we just can't. This is not part of our teaching. This is, if you will, an extracurricular type of activity that goes on for recruiting, but then also kind of being the Pied Pipers of art, Stanley said. There is a national juried show in the gallery right now with artists from around the country. Instead of having local shows or even regional shows, we're moving into that national, and then quite possibly international within the next year or so. All those things work to build up the reputation, help our students get exposed to a bunch of different ways to work. All of those meet those educational outcomes, which is producing a high-quality graduate, Stanley said. First Five Kinder Camp coming up. University of Texas Permian Basin First Five's Kinder Camp is coming up July 15th through 19th in a hybrid version, partly virtual and partly in person. Including children from Ector and Midland counties, the in-person part of the camp will be held in the multi-purpose room in the Mesa building on University of Texas Permian Basin campus. The hybrid option will let First Five reach more families, HIPPE coordinator Leanne Baya said. HIPPE stands for Home Instruction for Parents of Preschool Youngsters. About 80 families have enrolled in Kinder Camp this year. Basically, we're here to help families through the transition to kindergarten. We're offering them parent resource topics ranging from home routines for school, how to be involved in your child's education, how to communicate with your child's teacher, and then dealing with separation, as there's a lot of children that have never been in a school or have never been separated from their mom. So kind of just giving them tips and little things on how that it can help them through the transition of starting school and starting kinder, Baya said. It's not only the children that have to deal with separation, it also impacts the parents as they let go and entrust their child with someone else, she said. Baya said they help families with purchasing school supplies, and it helps build children's social-emotional skills. If they're able to join the in-person sessions, they get to meet other children. A lot of the time, they can meet someone that's enrolled or registered at the same school. So we do allow them an opportunity to just kind of meet other kids that are going into kinder as well, she added. Last year's camp was hybrid as well. Parents enjoyed being able to do activities with their children, and it gave them practice for when their children start bringing homework. A lot of the activities during camp let children use scissors, crayons, and use their imaginations while the parents connect with their child during the activity. Baya said it can also encourage parents to get involved in school. During the day, we try to cover the main objectives like literacy, math, science, language. That's in there as well. They'll be making their own book, so using their creativity to write their own book and put it together, Baya said. They will also be making cloud dough, a mixture of cornstarch and hair conditioner, adding with elephants, making a safari explorer, and categorizing the way animals move, like animals that fly and walk and run. The kids will cut out an explorer, who will use binoculars made from toilet paper rolls to observe the animals. Although it's not being held in a school as it was some years before, Baya said it still helps the children. I feel it does. First Five, as an agency, we focus on helping build healthy, happy families, helping the parent, empowering and encouraging the parent to be their child's first teacher. We're just staying true to that where the parent is being involved in their education. They want to know. They want to help them learn and help them succeed. This is a way to stay true to that as an agency itself, she added. ECISD holds grievance hearings. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees held 4 Level 3 grievance hearings Thursday. Trustees upheld the decisions of the Level 2 grievance hearing. In the first hearing, there was no motion, so the Level 2 decision was upheld. The first hearing related to a complaint filed by Amanda Napoleon, Special Education Supervisor. On the other Level 3 grievance hearings for teachers Kendra Salgado, Timothy August Young, and Christine Carrillo, the decisions from the Level 2 hearings were upheld. Tatiana Dennis, an attorney for ECISD, said the teacher hearings were related to the teacher incentive allotment. The Texas Education Agency website says the teacher incentive allotment was established with the goal of providing outstanding teachers with an accessible pathway to a six-figure salary. STEM adds new Dean of Students by Ruth Campbell. A longtime teacher of math and science, Jacob Green is moving to the role of Dean of Students at STEM Academy. As Dean of Students, Green will handle discipline, attendance, and anything involving students' relations, such as field trips and extracurricular activities. The main thing is trying to build relationships with students and be able to be there for them and be their point of contact as an administrator, Green said. Green has been teaching at STEM for 4 years. I just really enjoy the school. My kids go here, and I just felt that I could make more of an impact across the school in this position, he added. Green said he was making an impact as a teacher, but feels he can make more of a positive change as Dean of Students. The main goals that I'm looking at are just trying to develop more of a team atmosphere and bringing the grade levels together more rather than having it split by elementary and secondary, Green said. He said it's not as united a team as they could be. Since they are doing project-based learning, there's a lot of opportunity for grade-level cooperation. We have the opportunity to be a really cohesive and seamless transition into that secondary level, but most people just don't have that opportunity, and we need to take advantage of it, Green said. This also helps students' performance, as Calculus 1 students had a chance to tutor Algebra 1 students. In the process of them helping bring those algebra students up and get their skills higher, that built their skills from teaching. One of the fastest ways to learn is to teach, because if you can teach it, you really understand it. If you try to teach it, that just drives your understanding even higher, Green said. Originally from Hallsville in East Texas, Green earned a bachelor's degree in mathematics and a master's degree in natural science, with an emphasis in math education from Stephen F. Austin University. Initially, Green was going to be an engineer, but he started working with the tutoring center at SFA. In the process of doing that, I got to just loving the moving around, the talking, the light that comes on in people's eyes whenever they all of a sudden figure it out. I just fell in love with it. So, I became a teacher, he said. He taught for 5 years at small schools in East Texas. Then my wife got pregnant and wanted to stay at home. She's also a teacher. We moved out here. I worked as an engineer in the oil field for 6 years. I worked at Halliburton, and then I worked at a drill bit company, both times as an engineer. Then, whenever COVID happened, I ended up getting furloughed and then eventually laid off because the work just didn't come back quick enough. In that time of being furloughed, I'd already applied here and gotten the position and was ready to go before they had even officially laid me off, he added. It turned out to be a blessing. That was one of those situations where people were like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I heard you got laid off." And I was like, "What are you talking about? This is probably the greatest thing that's happened to me. I'm back to doing what I love," Green said. He and his wife, Anessa, a math professor at Midland College, have 2 boys. Having taught at small public schools, Green said he found STEM is much the same. Its size is really nice and the students are amazing. I've seen things here that I just wouldn't have believed before. I'm a real big fan of project-based learning. A lot of it is student-led and student-driven. They really like to take charge, which is great, and I just love to watch them learn and be part of it, Green said. Although he'll be a dean, he'll still be popping into classrooms, visiting with students, and building relationships. He noted that he's really excited about his new post. "I think it's going to be hard to let go and watch somebody else step in and take over my spot. But I'm still here. I'm still able to help that person and still talk to students. So I think it'll be fine," he added. Amy Anderson is moving over to be Dean of Teaching and Learning. She had also been the AVID Director for Ector County ISD. We are excited to have Jacob Green serve as the STEM Academy's Dean of Students. Jacob has been an important member of our community for many years as former high school chemistry and physics teacher, as well as a parent of two students here at STEM, Executive Director Shannon Davidson said. He is now stepping into a leadership role that includes student supports. He will focus on fostering a strong and supportive culture for our students. Jacob is very well respected by his peers and students. He is known for his creative and quick problem-solving abilities, as well as his amazing spreadsheets. He brings many talents and new ideas to our team, Davidson added. The school has not had deans before. The reorganization came about because they are a kindergarten through 12th grade school on a university campus. Our needs are very unique, and we want a clear pipeline all the way from kinder to 12th. With that, it makes sense to model after the university style of leadership with deans overseeing each of those different avenues. Having a dean of students that oversees all things student supports. The number one goal in the dean of students is, of course, culture building and helping the students in all ventures of that. And then teaching and learning and giving the teachers all the supports they need as far as teaching and instruction. Having that continuity throughout K through 12, that one voice for each of those areas, and the consistency throughout all the way from kinder up through 12th, Davidson said. Local news roundup. Odessan accused of raping three girls. An Odessa man was arrested Tuesday after three separate children told authorities he sexually assaulted them on multiple occasions over the last 2 years. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a call from Medical Center Hospital last Sunday after a 12-year-old girl reported Brian Adam Fallon had sexually assaulted her last Friday and on at least five other occasions beginning in 2023. While investigating the girl's claims, two other girls, ages 13 and 14, said they too had been sexually assaulted by Fallon, the state reported. According to the report, both outcries detailed matching methods of operation in the assault. A sexual assault nurse examination was conducted on all three victims, and there was evidence at least one of the girls had been sodomized, the report indicated. Fallon was arrested on suspicion of aggravated sexual assault of a child. He remains in Ector County Jail Wednesday night on a $75,000 surety bond. Ector County Sheriff's Office, guitar, beer bottle used in assault. An Odessa man accused of attacking another with an acoustic guitar, a glass beer bottle, and his fists was arrested July 2nd on an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon warrant. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Department report that was released Tuesday, deputies were dispatched to a home on West 61st Street on May 15th after an assault. When deputies arrived, they found a 32-year-old man in the back of an ambulance with a shattered orbital floor, eyes that were swollen shut, and a bloody nose and mouth. The man told deputies he's been living in an RV on the property for about a year with the permission of Jacob Eicher's former girlfriend, the report stated. He said that earlier Eicher came into the RV, put him in a chokehold, slammed him to the floor, and repeatedly punched him. According to the report, the man said Eicher, also 32, hit him with an acoustic guitar and a glass beer bottle until both broke. He said Eicher threatened to kill him and himself before leaving. Eicher was booked into the Ector County Jail on the warrant July 2nd and was released the next day after posting a surety bond of $75,000. Argument over cell phones leads to assault charge. An Odessa woman was arrested last Saturday night after her husband accused her of threatening him with a knife during an argument over cell phones. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call from the 2600 block of Santa Cruz Lane around 9 p.m. Sunday. When officers arrived, a 31-year-old man told them his wife, Dayanise Padron Echavarria, 21, got upset at him because he took her phone away from her and wouldn't give it back, the report stated. He said she grabbed a knife from the kitchen, held it overhead, and came at him before lowering it and advancing toward him in a threatening manner. Echavarria told officers she and her husband were arguing because they each had the other's phone, the report stated. She said her husband grabbed her by the back of her hair, and after he let her go, she went and got the knife and threatened him with it. Officers noted in their report that Echavarria's hair was in a nice, neat bun. She was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. She remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday on a $30,000 surety bond and an Immigration and Customs Enforcement hold. Obituaries and death notices. Miguel Mikey Sanchez. Miguel Mikey Sanchez went to be with his Lord and Savior on June 28, 2024. He was born to Cipriano E. Sanchez and Bernarda Gonzalez Sanchez on April 18, 1957, in Odessa, Texas. A rosary and memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, September 6, 2024, at La Paz Parish's Funeral Home in Odessa. Mikey will be reunited in heaven with his parents, his sister, Velma Pondo, his cats, Jennifer and Jammers, as well as many good friends, cousins, uncles, and aunts. Mikey leaves behind his children, daughters Michelle Ramirez and Karina Sanchez, and his son, Salvador Sanchez, three sisters, Cecilia Sanchez, Rosemary Andros, Olga Sanchez, and brother Robert Sanchez. Mikey also leaves behind seven grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. Billy Wayne Johnson. Billy Wayne Johnson, 89, of Odessa, died Tuesday, July 9, 2024, in Odessa. Graveside service was held at 3 p.m. July 12th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Joseph Michael Mike Mapp. Joseph Michael Mike Mapp, 28, of Odessa, died Sunday, June 30, 2024, in Midland. Funeral service was held at 12 p.m. Monday, July 15th, at Acres West Funeral Home. Pets of the Week. Mindy, a one-year-old female Schnauzer mix, and Doogie, a one-year-old Chihuahua mix, need to be adopted into good homes. To adopt Mindy or Doogie, or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 2230 West Sycamore, or call 432-257-4311. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $75. Donations are also welcome and will go toward kennels, cat houses, and adoption center.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, July 15th. Large school choir camp preps kids for competition. Students from the large high schools in Odessa and Midland got an early start on preparing for the all-state audition process during University of Texas Permian Basin's large choir camp. The three-day experience includes sectional rehearsals, singing as a group, and being directed by some of the most experienced choir directors in the area. There are about 25 students in the camp this year, with Permian and Odessa High Schools and Midland and Legacy High Schools in Midland joining in. Quote, the students will, over the course of the fall semester, audition several times, UTPB Director of Community Engagement in Music and Visual Arts, Eric Baker, said. We have district region, pre-area, and then area competitions. If the students place well enough at all of those auditions, they can earn a spot in the Texas All-State Choir, end quote. Students will find out if they made All-State in January. Choir auditions start in September. Quote, there's still quite a ways to go before we'll know who's an All-Stater, but they started the process early. They're learning the music right now, Baker said. They hired high school choir directors to prepare the students, including Stephanie Burton, Christy Lujan, Rob Rogers, and Cody Duff, the new head director at Legacy High School. Quote, each of them will teach what we call sectionals. One will take the sopranos, the altos, the tenors, the basses, and the students work in those sectionals for several hours during the day. They come together at the end of the afternoon for a full choir rehearsal. Those are being led by our new Director of Choral Activities, Dr. Brad Light. He's in town for this camp and will be moving over the summer to get local, Baker said. Light has been a lecturer of music and choral studies and music education at Texas Tech the last several years. Baker said the camp is going well, although it just started July 10th. Quote, most of the camps that we looked at around the state are 3 or 4 days max. We want to model what students would get if they go to Tech or Baylor or any other school, but it's close to home. It's much less expensive and a lot more accessible for some of the students that are not able to go out of town for other camps, Baker said. He added that the camp focuses on the music students are likely to see during the audition process. Quote, when a student auditions for All-State Choir, they have to learn a lot of music, but they don't need to learn them all at once. They'll learn some songs for the district level. Later, they'll learn more difficult songs for the area level of competition. We get them started early with those pieces that they're going to see first. So far, lots of smiles. They sound wonderful. The students are singing beautifully even after just the first day of learning the music. The teachers are fun and engaging. I've been able to sit in on a few of the sectionals and listen, and they all seem to be getting along quite well, Baker said. He added that UTPB music students who may eventually want to become choir directors are counselors at the camp. This is the first time Baker has facilitated a music camp at UTPB, but it is part of his role. As they look to the future, they would like to build a band camp, piano camp, more choir camps, including small school, and maybe even music theory camps. Quote, I'm not really the content expert in choir music, but I'm just helping to facilitate along with our administrative assistants, Angela Buss and Yvonne Drinkard. Without them, these camps wouldn't happen. They also help buying food, ordering T-shirts, ordering lunches so that the students can come in, focus on the music, have everything taken care of, and go home excited about this audition process, Baker said. He added that even if students don't ultimately make All-State, it's still a chance to learn and make friends. Quote, we try to make sure that there's a positive social element to the camp as well. We want students to remember how much fun they had, not only about how much they learned about the music. Local choir directors will sometimes program some of the music from the All-State collection on their fall concerts, so this also gives a head start for those students who are studying and learning some of that music, Baker said. Light said they want to provide a service to the community through the camp and provide something that will help students advance their musicianship. Lily Windham, age 16, who will be a junior at Permian High School, said this is her first choir camp. Quote, I thought that it was really good. It's very helpful to learn the music beforehand, because last year it was hard to get ahead of everybody else for the auditions whenever you're learning the music at school, so it's easier to get ahead now and learn it. Everyone's been so helpful, Wyndham said. She added that she would like to make All-State. Wyndham said other kids and PHS Director of Choirs Lori Wash told her the camp would be helpful. Quote, I made it to area last year. I'm trying to give it that extra push this year to make it, Wyndham said. My choir director, Miss Wash, had told us this was a good option because I didn't have time in the summer to go out of town to the bigger ones. This has been really helpful, and it's been nice to have one-on-one time for the directors to work with you, she added. Georgina Raucho, a UTPB senior studying music education, is working with the choir camp this year. She previously worked in the small choir camp. Quote, working with the large school choir camp has been a whole new experience, but it's been really fun to get to see the kids because the music for the camps is very different. When I was in high school, I was in small school, so getting to experience what large school choir is singing has been really cool, Raucho said. Odessan arrested on robbery charge. A 35-year-old Odessa man was arrested on suspicion of robbery, family violence, Thursday night after police responded to a shots-fired call at the West Texas Oil Change on East 8th Street. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 38-year-old woman said she and her boyfriend, Justin Nahara, age 35, got into an argument about her phone when Nahara was dropping her off at the business. The woman said Nahara refused to give her iPhone 15, so she refused to get out of his vehicle. According to the report, the woman said Nahara punched her in the shoulder and pushed her head into the front passenger window to get her out of the vehicle. When she got out, the woman told officers she reached inside to get her phone from Nahara, and he grabbed her arm multiple times, the report stated. According to the report, the woman said she grabbed Nahara's gun to make sure he didn't get it. She said she accidentally pulled the trigger and the gun went off, with the bullet hitting the pavement. Nahara, she said, drove off. According to the report, Nahara denied that a gun was ever fired, but acknowledged arguing with his girlfriend. He said the argument was over his refusal to give her a straight answer about their relationship. Nahara also told officers he had his girlfriend's phone, but said it was because she left it in the truck, the report stated. Officers arrested Nahara after observing fresh red marks and other injuries on the woman, the report stated. He was released from the Ector County Jail Friday after posting a $25,000 surety bond. Alcohol, speed, lead to fatal wreck. Two people were killed Friday night after crashing through a fence and striking Bowie Middle School in a speed and alcohol-related event. According to the Odessa Police Department, officers learned of the crash at 22nd and Golder around 11:30 p.m. Investigators determined that a 2018 Nissan Altima was traveling at a high rate of speed eastbound on West 22nd Street when the driver lost control and the car hit a street sign and the north fence of the middle school. The car continued through the fence and hit the west side of the school and came to rest. The driver and a passenger were pronounced dead at the scene. The investigation continues. Pecos man accused of sexual assault. A 24-year-old Pecos resident was arrested Thursday after admitting to having sex with a 16-year-old girl multiple times at an Odessa motel and at his home in Pecos. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers were summoned to Medical Center Hospital on April 24th after learning the girl was requesting a sexual assault nurse examination. Investigators learned from the girl's mother the teenager had asked permission to go to a party with some friends on April 18th, and when she didn't come home, she was reported as a runaway on April 21st, the report stated. She came home on April 24th and a short time later went to the hospital. The girl told investigators Angel Gomez Nunez, the stepfather of one of her friends, picked her up and took her to Days Inn and then Pecos, the report stated. When interviewed May 2nd, Nunez admitted to having sex with her several times, and investigators found Snapchat photos of the two of them together, the report stated. Nunez was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault of a child and released from the Ector County Jail Friday after posting a $25,000 surety bond. Master Gardeners, Blazing Hot Summer Plants, Part 1. This was written by Emmy Almschneider, Master Gardener. In our previous article, we wrote about the need and strategies for growing a more resilient garden in our hotter summer weather. One of the options we mentioned was to explore growing tropical and subtropical crops, which are adapted to our hotter summer conditions. So, let's delve more deeply into these blazing hot summer plants and start by reviewing the common plants you might already know and then venture into the unknown. Remember that lack of knowledge and finding a source for non-traditional summer vegetables is the greatest deterrent to branching out and trying new summer crops. Okra, black-eyed peas, yard-long beans, and sweet potatoes are on that common known list, and we have previously written about sweet potatoes. Okra and black-eyed peas, a type of southern pea, are staples in the South, and starch may be found locally. Okra is widely appreciated in the South, but not so much in colder areas. Okra produces prolifically in our long, hot summers and in other tropical and subtropical regions of the world. It is a food staple. Recognized as a healthy food, its fibers help lower cholesterol and other plant compounds help stabilize blood sugar in diabetics. The fibers have also been used for making paper and cordage. The beautiful flowers are also edible. It is a member of the mallow family, as is the native Pavonia, the Lady Bird Johnson 2024 Wildflower of the Year. Traditional green, round peas and black-eyed peas are both in the legume family, Fabaceae, but are in different genera. True peas belong to the genus Picum, while the cream-colored black-eyed peas belong to the genus Vigna. So, technically, the black-eyed pea is not a pea, but a bean, and we grow and consume them differently. The delicate taste and texture of round green garden peas are an early spring treat, fresh or cooked. Black-eyed peas or other types of southern peas, as beans, are heartier, and you might even cook them with meat-like other beans. Similarly, long beans or yard-long beans look like extra-long green beans, and although they are in the same family, Fabaceae, they also are in a different genera. Like black-eyed peas, yard-long beans are in the genus Vigna, but green beans are in the genus Phaseolus. We eat the young edible pods of yard-long beans like we would a green bean, but if you let the yard-long bean mature, the interior seeds can also be dried and eaten like other types of beans. True green beans are planted in the spring or in the fall as they can't survive the summer heat. But if you crave traditional green beans in summer months, try growing yard-long beans, which are blazing hot summer plants. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700. Additional information and our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on Resources.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.